All right, good morning, everyone. I'd like to call to order the open meeting for Wednesday, May 18th, 2022, and ask the Commission Secretary for information on today's agenda.
Each commissioner has independently reviewed the minutes of the open meeting Thursday, May 12th, 2022, and each has informed me there is no need to discuss the minutes.
Move we approve the minutes of Thursday, May 12th, 2022.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Each commissioner has independently reviewed the agenda, and each has informed me there is no need to discuss the notices associated with agenda items 2 through 4.
Move we approve the notice of investigation associated with agenda item 2.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. For agenda items 3 and 4, I move we approve the notices of proceeding.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that brings us to agenda item 5, which is the fiscal year 2022 and 2023 telemedicine grant. The first item that we need to consider is there was some supplemental information filed that was an expense that the Bad River Band of Chippewa Indians wants to add to their application. My understanding is that if we allow that supplemental material, this grant round will still be unsubscribed, so that there are dollars available. And I don't have a problem accepting that supplemental information related to their application. Commissioner Moore?
Yeah, I was a little disappointed in the reason for it's such a late filing. They said it wasn't known, and that it was like a one sentence statement. I find that a little hard to believe, particularly the material they sent was dated about 10 days before they even sent it in. You know, it seemed to me it was more of an oversight, and if you made a mistake, then own it and just say we missed it rather than we didn't know it. Pretty sure they probably knew this at the time and they just didn't send it in. So to me, that's the test, whether or not, you know, why we accept something late is, you know, is there a valid reason? To me, at least I didn't understand one that was given. I understand there is money. We wouldn't be, we could use money and monies into the next fiscal years for it. But I would not grant the supplemental information since I don't think there was adequate justification provided as to why it was provided so late before we have to decide.
Commissioner Huebner?
Yeah, this is a tough one, but I'm going to join you, Chair. I think at the end of the day, talking to staff, it sounds, you know, the material is part of the x-ray machine that they're planning to use. It's unfortunate that there was an oversight before, but because we do have the extra fund, I think at this point it's okay to allow it in. So.
Okay. All right, so since 2008, we've combined consideration and approval of these telemedicine grant requests for a two-year period into the single evaluation. So when combined, we have $1 million available for these grants. We received 15 grant application funds requests, and the purpose of the program is to encourage the use of telecommunications equipment and services to promote technologically advanced medical services, to directly or indirectly enhance access to medical care in rural or underserved areas of the state, and to directly or indirectly enhance access to medical care by underserved populations or persons with disability. There was a 3-person screening panel. They rated the applications in merit order. They also identified 3 applications that were ineligible. The first is Edgerton Hospital Capital Foundation. That's for the heart telemetry equipment. The second one that they deemed to be ineligible was Hearing Milestones LLC, because that's a for-profit organization. And then the third is the Hudson Hospital Foundation, and that's because the grant is seeking dollars to be used for neonatal services. For me, it's clear under the eligibility requirements in the code that all 3 of those applications are ineligible. So because of that, as it relates to eligibility, I would find that all three are ineligible.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't see a, you know, hearing milestone asks us basically waive the, you know, I don't know where we begin to draw the line on when you waive and when you don't. So I think the other two also didn't meet the eligibility criteria, so I wouldn't allow them.
Yep, I'm in the same spot. Not to downplay the merits or the concepts that they propose, but just for the specifics of this telemedicine grant program, these three didn't qualify. So, thank you.
Okay. And so then the remainder of the applications were determined to be eligible, and they were ranked in their order. And so when I looked at the list, I was okay with funding all of the eligible applications, including that additional amount of Bad River Band of $2 million. So that puts me at alternative one. Commissioner Noir?
Yeah, I don't have any. A lot of these we have seen over the several years. They're repeat applicants and repeat types of projects that are also being funded. I don't have any changes to the proposals, except that I would still not fund the additional. The one thing I just would say overall, and this is just generally looking forward, is that the statute and this program was written before we've had all this newer technology come along. And I think whether it's, you know, the legislature in combination with us, and perhaps different rules need to be promulgated to, I think, start to match where the technology meets what we're seeing in applications, because we've been seeing over the years, sometimes I think we're getting to the edges of the interpretations of what it means, you know, under this grant program. And I think that's a call that we should sit down and, you know, that's a legislative call if they want to change that. And, you know, with our input, we can discuss what kind of things we are seeing. But like I said, I think we're teetering on the edge here of, you know, having some changes needed to be made to the statutes for this.
Technology changes faster than the law. We've heard that, know that. I am with you, Chair, and Commissioner Nowak, too. I mean, I didn't have any other changes. I thought all the other ones were eligible and meritorious. And then, as we discussed, I would include that additional from the Bad River. So I'm at alternative one.
Okay. So I will move that we, in docket 5TF 2022, approve the fiscal year 2022-23 telemedicine grant pursuant to our discussion today. And I guess that also includes the carry forward into the next year, the balance of the $500,000 for 2023, just to make that clear that we're doing that. Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that brings us to agenda item 6, which is docket 2800-ER-109. This is the application of the City of Sakana as an electric public utility for authority to adjust its electric rate. So this one is interesting and has a little bit of history to it. It's a normal rate case, but for, and there are a number of uncontested alternatives that my understanding from the commission secretary is there's no need to discuss those uncontested alternatives. But this is an interesting case because of this wholesale delivery service agreement that Kapana had in place. And as I indicated, it's sort of been through a long and winding road. I guess I'm interested to hear in what my colleagues have to say about this particular agreement and the revenues that flowed from that agreement. So it goes back to 2001. We became aware of this agreement back in the 2016-2017 timeframe during a prior rate case. It was then decided that a separate TE docket should be open. And in the course of all of this occurring, the utility lost a very large customer in Appleton Coated. And so interim rates were ordered. And at the heart of this WDSA is whether or not the revenues that were calculated under that agreement were properly collected, because there was no specific tariff to identify any type of rate or billing unit that would be able to calculate that revenue. So when you can't properly calculate revenue and you don't have a billing unit available to you, then it makes it impossible to be able to forecast that for purposes of setting rates. And so there are a number of arguments that were put forward. The Federal Power Act was put forward as being the controlling law over this type of an agreement. Kokana feels very strongly that it is entitled to retain the revenues that were collected under the WDSA. For me, at its core, is this is about the ability to deliver electric power across the distribution system. It's not a kayak launch. PFOB, I think that was brought up in the testimony. Yeah. I get it. There are other sources of revenue. I appreciate that.
This is a little more related to what they do.
So in my mind, when we talk about the utilization of utilities distribution systems to do something like transport electricity, it's pretty core to the function of the utility. And I think one of the questions I asked in my briefing was, well, who pays for the operation and maintenance of that distribution system? And the answer, of course, was Kokana's customers. So in my mind, because of that, these are revenues that should have been, they should have been subject to a filed rate or a tariff. And there should be some sort of billing unit in order to be able to calculate what's coming in, because it's not something like the kayak launch PFOB revenue. So I feel pretty strongly that the wholesale delivery service agreement revenues should be returned to ratepayers. We can talk about it more specifically, but that for me was the threshold issue, the threshold matter in this case, and then things like the revenue requirement and rate allocation will flow from having to return those revenues. I also understand and respect our position, and I think all three of us have been pretty consistent in acknowledging that we're not out to put utilities in financial peril, because it's not good for the utilities, and then it's not good ultimately for the utility customers. So it is not my intent to put the utility into financial ruin, but rates and revenues that are collected from customers that have to do with the core function of providing electricity need to be properly accounted for, and they need to be, they need to have some sort of billing unit associated with them. So for issue one, my answers to the question would be, yes, the WDSA revenue should be returned to ratepayers. I am not inclined to apply carrying costs to that revenue because of the financial strain I think that would put onto the utility. And then we can talk about that come later. So for, I don't know if my colleagues want to say anything related to this opening issue, issue one.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have to, there's my pithy notes on it too. Thank you, just in time. I have to bring my black notebook and I have several, obviously, so thank you.
Better to be thorough.
Thank you. This one was difficult because I do agree with you that let's start at the back end. There should be something on file about what they're collecting. This was I didn't see, there was an argument, this is wholesale, this relates to FERC. this wasn't a sale for resale. This was the utility acting as that they were providing that service, using the distribution system. What I am most concerned about is going forward, do we have something on file that lets all the ratepayers know, let us know, are the charges being properly applied and are they being appropriately charged and are other customers not subsidizing that cost? So I think going forward, we need to know that. There was an argument, we don't even need to see anything on it. I don't believe that either. That is, I mean, that starts down a very slippery slope of, you know, charges being made by a utility to a customer that we are not aware of, that ratepayers are not aware of, and that kind of goes to the core of what we do. Now, having said that, there is no clear evidence in the record that prior to 2017 or 18, how where these were put into revenues. I saw it both ways. And it was difficult to, without the, and we're never going to know. I mean, I think they tried to show as much as possible, but we're never going to be able to find that exact line item. And, you know, part of me tends to believe it wasn't that forecasting for that CP, I think it was the CP3 or CP2 customer group. So where I landed was going forward, because if we say, well, those dollars, I tend to believe that they were somewhere in rates, but now asking the ratepayers to pay them back because of the structure of this utility, direct, essentially asking the ratepayers to take money out of one pocket and put it in a different pocket. And that also doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. And these are the hardest ones. We had this with Pewaukee too. When you have a municipal, how do you really adjust for wrongs in the past? Sometimes there's a pathway to fix that part in the past, but sometimes the best way is to make sure it gets right moving forward. And I think that's been corrected since the last time they were in 2017-18, where it's now being accounted for and it's known. And then if you guys agree, having something on file moving forward. I think going back and trying to capture something that we still to this day don't know if it was already captured in rates, I'm not comfortable with that. So this is one of those where it's not, I don't like the answers. I don't like either answer, but I think that this is the comfort level. We have to move forward and acknowledge what it is and just fix it, because I don't like the ratepayers basically paying themselves back. That doesn't make sense to me either.
Okay. Commissioner.
Thank you. Indeed, this was an interesting, unique situation. Where I landed after lots of different flowcharts and things like that is basically at where you landed, Chair, which is this, you know, this should have been a tariff. There should have been a schedule related to these rates. I agree with you, Commissioner Nowak. It's unclear. Maybe, and there's a difference of opinion that components, rate, you know, applications included this. Commission staff saying we didn't include it, and so to go back and say, was that $57,000 out of a much, you know, a large municipal utility, was that included or not? You know, I agree. I don't know the answer, but then it kind of landed back at it was supposed to be tariff. Because as you both said, it, despite the arguments about getting to wholesale, really that's once it gets to ATC and goes up from there, then we're talking about wholesale. But what Kaukauna Utilities was doing was conveying it among their distribution system. So I think that it was a distribution system service, as you said, Chair, and I think that at the end of the day, I'm kind of in the same spot. Neither answer is really satisfactory, but I think the right thing to do is to say that those revenues should have been accounted for by a tariff and therefore to return them. that gets to kind of a secondary issue we may talk about in issue five, but sort of is it the right thing to do to return them to all customers versus just the collect, which doesn't exist anymore? And I guess the chain of logic that I thought Commission Staff Schuster used, I thought that that was reasonable, which is to say, you know, collect was sold to Appleton Coated. Subsequently, Appleton Coated went into receivership and didn't pay utility bills. So now all the other customers over 10 years are paying Appleton Coated's unpaid bills. Appleton Coated now owns this facility, or their subsequent entity, APV, that bought out Appleton Coated. So it to me, there's a chain of logic that makes sense. Customers are paying old debts of Appleton Coated, and now customers would be, you know, slightly relieved or somewhat relieved from the entire of the bad debts that they're going to have to pay over the next 6 years. So I thought that that chain of responsibility made sense. I don't know if you want to comment on that now, if you're going to comment that on issue five.
Yeah, well, and I think it's funny, right? And that is exactly what you bring up. That was staff's proposal that the amount of the $867,871 be returned over 6 years, which then offsets that remaining amortization period for the uncollectible. And so I was okay with that approach. I do think that it made, I thought it was reasonable given the circumstances, given the choices in front of us, because I agree with Commissioner Nowak, neither choice is a great choice. But I do think that it is a reasonable resolution of this issue. So for 1A, I agree with staff's proposal, which is alternative one, to return the revenue over that.
Well, I'm going to stay at alternative three, just it's fortuitous that the bad debt was there to offset it. We could get it back,
right.
But I just still go back to if we don't know for sure, it's hard to say who it has to be returned to if it has to be returned. And I just feel like we have to just move forward from this, and these are hard, but it is hard for me to say because we could be inadvertently harming the customers by kind of saying, you know, the bad debt can't get collected now if that's what that proposal is going to be. So I'll stay at alternative here.
Commissioner Hagel.
Yeah, so I'm at alt one on issue 1A.
Okay, and then 1B is the issue of carrying costs. If we were to include carrying costs, it would more than double. Or if we were to include carrying costs at the customer deposit rate, it would make that amount just over $1 million. So I was, and again, I mentioned this earlier, the utility noted that they're in somewhat of a precarious financial situation in terms of their cash reserves. So I was at alt one. I would not apply carrying costs to the revenue.
Yeah, I'll just say if that's the route that that's going to go, I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, I was coming in at alt three, but I'll join you at alt one. I think you're, I thought the customer deposit rate was reasonable middle ground as well, but I think your point is well taken, and those $2 amounts are pretty somewhat close. But I think your point overall is well taken, that this is a reasonable resolution to this situation without financially minimizing the impact to the utility by not including carrying costs. I think that makes sense. I'll join you.
Issues 1C and 1D, or and issue 2, excuse me, are both uncontested. So now we get to talk about cost of service study. And my understanding is, and I know that we typically decline to endorse a specific cost of service model, And so I would, I'm going to keep with that decision that I'm not going to set the specific cost of service model, but my understanding is that the 3.08 efficiency is with returning the revenues and no carrying costs.
Okay.
All right. Got it. Just so that we're all clear that that's what that amounts to. So for cost of service study, I'm going to be at alternative to not adopt a specific model. Commissioner Noy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I'm in the same spot.
All right. Now, just to talk about revenue allocation, which is always fun. So this is going to get a little tricky.
Yeah, I might have to talk to staff here on this since this has taken different turns. Than
right.
I,
and so I think that... sort of the tag team of Tanner and Tyler did a good job of putting forward a way to go about this. And I think I understand it, but my understanding is that because we now have two votes to return those revenues, we can use the revenue allocation that was proposed by the applicant in their rebuttal. So that would be the Clevin 6. And then adjust it for what the final revenue requirement is.
So for the 3.08 or somewhere in there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
That's my understanding. That's correct.
Yeah. So the column then that's what I was going to ask. The 3.08 right here is based on the ratios for staff, but you're saying apply the ratios from the column to the left of it to the 3.08.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. That's
correct.
Where I was going to.
Yep.
If we, yeah. Okay.
Yep. That's fine. All right.
Yeah, I'm in the same
problem. Understand what
I
we just said.
I want to thank Cub and Kaukauna Utilities and WIG for coming to agreement on revenue allocation, a revenue requirement, and most of rate design and revenue allocation. I think that was helpful. As you can see in the decision matrix, they're all worded a little differently, but all in the same spot. Alternative one with the rebuttal Kaukauna Cleveland 6 as our starting point. And so I support that. And we'll adjust it in a certain way under issue 5.
Right.
Yeah.
I will say I found it interesting and perhaps odd the position of Cub in particular on the return of the dollars.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah.
That came up in our briefing.
Yeah. Yeah, mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Considering the, yeah,
uh-huh.
It was just, it stood out. Yeah, it
mm-hmm.
stood out in contrast to positions in the past.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Okay. That brings us to issue 5. So, how should the changes in the final revenue requirements be allocated among the customer classes? So it can either be spread across all of the classes, or it can be used based on a particular cost of service study. So that can be energy related, or as it's pointed out in our memo, you can take the ratio of each customer class's revenue divided by the total electric sales. In order to come up with how to allocate that final revenue requirement. And so I think that based on our decision in issue 4, that it makes sense to use the ratio.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Of each customer class revenue.
Yeah.
So that's where I landed.
Yeah. Same as the revenue allocation. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you would use it based on the revenue allocation and not, I guess where I was coming in was just to reduce the energy charge. So whatever the dollar amount for each class that they would get, it would just be a reduction of the kilowatt hour rate. So that was under alternative 2, e.g. energy or revenue. And I was thinking energy rate. And maybe we're talking about the same thing. So.
Yeah.
I think it is.
We are talking about the same thing.
So as I understand it, when you're talking about the revenue, you are basically saying preserve the allocation and just potentially follow that and bring it down almost like a haircut across the board.
Yep.
Yep.
And then on energy, I don't know that it would achieve exactly that.
I guess my point was that the way to achieve the haircut would be to reduce the kilowatt hour rate. So not reducing customer charges or demand charges, it would just be adjusting the energy rate ever so slightly.
Yep. So that would have variations on depending on like
energy users,
the amount of energy a specific class.
Yeah. Right.
So a higher energy class would see probably more savings as a result from that.
My understanding from the briefing was that was the way to get the closest match to the revenue requirement. And if you start adjusting like the demand charges, then going to be harder to match.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. So okay. I think what you're talking about, Commissioner Huebner, is almost more of like a next issue, a rate design issue.
Okay.
So with revenue allocation, I think you are, so getting back to what you guys talked about, I think you're at the same place for the most part, what I understand. But I think as far as adjustments to rates, I think you're saying is that, you know, adjust rate, energy rate.
Correct.
I don't know if that was helpful.
Yeah. Right. All right.
Just join us. Just make it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I've written down. Page 4, allocator used, rebuttal, retail revenue allocator sales. I think that's where you're at.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yep. All right. Okay. Issue 6. Which is what is the appropriate overall electric rate design? So there are a couple of things happening here between 6A and 6B. The threshold issue is the rate design. So for this one, I was okay accepting the rate design that's proposed by the applicant again, because that's to be consistent. And then the remaining issues of the customer charge and the demand charge are separate decision items. So for issue 6, I'm at alt 1.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I'm at the same spot.
Okay. Okay. Then 6A, should the customer charge for the residential and general service classes be increased? And if so, by how much? So Kapana proposed to increase their fixed charges from $13 to $16, $25 to $30 for residential, and then single phase and three phase under their general service would go up from $16 to $20 and $25 to $35 respectively. And so my understanding, and we've talked about this in other cases, is that these fixed customer charges are based on buckets of dollars, and those buckets of dollars have been in place for some time, and there hasn't necessarily been, and there wasn't in this case, a fulsome discussion about whether or not those buckets are appropriate. I think that is an appropriate discussion to have, but it's not for us to have in the absence of evidence on the record. So I went back and I looked at Cub's testimony and I looked at Tanner's testimony, and from what I gather, the information that is in front of us, I think Tanner's exhibits show justification for that, for the $12.69 on the residential side. Which aligns with the current charge of $13. So I, in this case, am not inclined to approve the increases to those fixed charges as proposed. I think that the evidence on the record shows that $12.69, and then it flows through to the other, the calculations are similar, that balances to the favor of keeping the fixed charges as they currently exist. So for this issue 6A, I am at alternative 3. This also came up in the briefing. I think it makes a lot of sense to have commission staff work with Kakana and other utilities to talk about the components of those customer charges and whether or not they still make sense. I mean, sort of like our discussion about technology as it changes, the types of expenses that maybe should or shouldn't be included in those buckets, I think it bears looking at. But again, it's nothing that we can, you know, talk about today and sort of arbitrarily make changes. So for 6A, I'm at alternative 3, maintaining them where they are. Commissioner Nowak?
Yeah, I felt there was enough here in the record from the utility, and Ms. Klebin had it in her testimony about what went into those buckets and the shift. And I think also in order to justify that slightly higher charge, because I think we have to continue to, as you said, look at the buckets and move rates that are more towards showing the actual cost to deliver what it costs to deliver to customers. Their evidence showed that right now, I think, only about 15% of the revenue is recovered through fixed charges. And for the average residential customer, 37% of the cost incurs for the is fixed. So 37% was fixed. So I think that mismatch, we have to continue, however, incrementally to move that to because what you end up with this mismatch, you have the higher use customers are effectively subsidizing the lower usage customers. So I agree, though, that I think we have to, you know, I invite utilities to continue to look at this, because I think moving forward, this is going to be an important consideration as different types of energy efficiency products and things move forward, that we're still capturing the actual, those fixed costs, those charges that it's going to take no matter what for customers to have the necessary energy. So I'm at alternative 1. Yeah, 1.
Okay. Yeah, I'm at alternative 3 on this. I think maintaining them is especially as you said, Chair, on this record is the right reasonable balance. You know, Cubs rate design shows for residential $6.71 in their preferred allocation of buckets. Staff's buckets have $12.69. Kakana's is something like $33, but Cub had kind of adjusted that to an $18.25 for what you know, they were looking at. So, I mean, in Cub's point, I think a couple of Cub's points I think makes sense. First, you can't just grab the distribution grid and say, we're going to pro rata assign this to every customer. I mean, that's not the way to do rate design. So the idea that we're just going to do that and save $33 is our cost and incrementally move, that is not the right way to design rates. We've seen in past cases a long history of commission orders, you know, not doing that for 40 years. I think Cub's point as well from Singletary, you know, fixed cost is not the same thing as fixed customer charges. Every industry has fixed costs. The accountants look at fixed costs. That doesn't mean that you go and get to collect them based on pro rata costs. And I thought Singletary's analogy of, you know, another fairly essential industry like a gas station, you know, you don't have an entrance fee to come in. You don't pay a monthly fee for gas stations. You go and they collect. They have fixed costs too, and they collect the revenue across variable units selling gasoline and food. So I think, you know, those theoretical arguments make sense to me, but I think at this point on this record that alternate 3 is reasonable. Thanks.
I wanted to just, I heard you, Chair, as were you then imposing a condition that in the next rate case,
And Commissioner Nowak, while you dissent on the portion of maintaining, would you join in that condition, it sounded like?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Yep. All right. That moves us to issue 6B. Should the commission approve the applicant's proposed demand charges for the CP3 customer class? Okay, so my understanding is that this was the tag team issue where we stopped short of adjusting the energy charge and taking that all the way through. So it's essentially accepting the demand rates proposed by the applicant, but then adjusting that the energy charge in order to achieve what we've all just agreed on. So I think that puts us at all three.
Are you? Sorry.
That's right.
Are you on 16?
Yes.
Oh. Sorry.
Yeah. So this because we have to, now that the theirs was premised on the energy charge going lower,
right,
than the fixed charge going up.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay. So Commissioner Huebner.
Yeah.
We would do it a different way.
Okay, hold on. Let me reread the staff. Yeah, I guess I had alternative one on this, and maybe I thought that this was just really related to those demand charges for the three periods lined up in that table. And then the energy rates would adjust accordingly, but.
Yeah, so, because you accepted the applicant's rate design, I think you are at alternative one then, because they account for the applicant with demand charges for CP3, and that would automatically, I think, carry forward to the energy. They'll both get you there, I guess. Is that where you were at going back to design? One.
So for issue five?
Yeah, issue five, or issue six.
Alt one,
which is accept the applicant's redesign adjusted for quite frankly, either one works.
Okay.
One works.
The difference is, the difference is the June, September, and the all other months, whether commission staff has the demand rate staying the same and Kaukauna's rates are low, demand charges are lower for those two periods. And they say that's based on the average cost or base cost of power calculated for each of those time periods. So I thought that's why I was at alt one. It seemed like that lined up with the charges that they're actually being caused.
Yeah. Okay. I think we should use sandbox. Sorry, I said it.
Okay.
And while we take the next case, just so that we can see what the impact is,
mm-hmm.
because my understanding from the briefing was that this was the one where it was an oversight and
we forgot
to adjust that energy charge all the way through,
right?
Which is why we have to land at alt three.
Right.
That
it's basically taking theirs, but with the adjust. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the sandbox won't achieve, I think.
But I think Commissioner Huebner, I think there's still some confusion in terms of what is the overall
revenue allocation going to look like.
Right.
I still think we're talking past each other with this issue and the earlier issues as to what everyone has decided, which, as I understand it, they decided to say, we're going to use the 3.08 revenue requirement. We're going to use the same ratios that were used by the cost of service of the applicant, and then we'll be able to see what that, what the by customer class that is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be instructive for them to see that.
Yeah.
And then, because I think that's where you're...
Well, I'm okay with that. I just think for the specific demand,
yeah,
we have to...
Right.
Yeah.
But I think it would still be helpful.
Right.
Yeah.
So
where
are you on the
So I misread alt three because I thought it said commission staff, but alt two is commission staff.
Yeah, alt three.
So is your alt three including applicants?
Yes. Their demand charges.
Correct.
So what we can do, if you want to see that, the minutes can reflect that. So when we do the revenue allocation, we can put those in the draft minutes,
okay.
So you can actually see the numbers.
Yep.
Okay.
Issue seven is a condition regarding the tariff filing for the WDSA revenue appropriate in this case. And this, yes, I think we all agree that this condition is appropriate based on all of our remarks at the onset of this case. I would just include the rates of the contract in the tariff. I don't need to step in the shoes of the utility and actually approve the agreement.
Right.
But I want to see what's in it.
Yeah, I'm just most concerned about is the customer being appropriately charged so that other customers aren't subsidizing for the service.
Yep.
Yeah, I think once we have a tariff, we'll have to, one way or another, possibly delegate it. But, I mean, we've got to assign that it's just and reasonable.
Yeah.
So
right. Yep.
We'll have to go down that road. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I think that puts us all at fault
one.
And then... Issue eight is a condition regarding accounting of the revenues appropriate in this case, and to Commissioner Noah, they've already fixed this.
And they've agreed.
And they've agreed.
Yeah.
So that puts me at alt one.
Yeah, same spot.
I'm at alt one.
Okay.
Sorry.
Can be done separately.
Okay. In docket 2800 ER109, I move that we approve, as discussed, the application of Kirkcona Utilities.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. That brings us to agenda item 7, which is docket 9812-EI-100. This is the application of the Dominion Nuclear Project Incorporated and Dominion Energy Kewaunee for approval of the sale of Dominion Energy Kewaunee Inc. stock to Energy Solutions LLC. As a threshold matter, there was a motion filed by CUB to supplement the record. The applicant then filed a response opposing that motion or in the alternative, seeking permission to file its own supplemental information. I would deny CUB's motion. I don't think it's probative, and I don't think it is necessary, at least for my, the way that I've read through the record, it adds nothing for me. So I would deny the motion.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is more than a stretch to say that it is related to the issues in this case. And it only seeks to, I think, clutter the record that is, I think, already been quite voluminous here. So we can talk about that. But, there's no probative value to that. and I would deny it as well.
Commissioner Hughes?
I would have accepted it. I think that, you know, their response at the end about how it goes to the conditions of energy solutions was enough of a connection for me. And I'll it spoke to the risk of decommissioning it kind of worked a little bit against Cubs' favor and argument on the role for it. And then it reinforced to me who do we want to have and responsibility and who don't we want. So I don't think I have any other comments on it, Cindy, besides that. But I don't expect to reference it later. But am I barred from referencing it now that it's not been included?
Correct, yeah. Got it. Correct. But we don't need to take up the separate motion on that. We'll just fold that into the final decision drafting, and your dissent on that piece will be noted.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay,
so our first decision, we're going to start at issue two. Back to 2005, when the commission granted the request of Wisconsin Power and Light and Wisconsin Public Service to transfer ownership and operational control of the Kewaunee Power Station to Dominion Energy Kewaunee. The commission's 2005 final decision included 12 proffered conditions. Those proffered conditions are what we are going to talk about today. So as part of the agreement that this commission approved, Dominion granted to Power and Light and Pub Service a right of first refusal in the event Dominion received a bona fide offer to purchase the plant from a third party. Item six of that ROFR, the right of first refusal, requires Power and Light and Pub Service to file with the commission a request for a declaratory ruling on the reasonableness and prudence of either exercising or waiving their rights under that ROFR. On May 27th of 2021, Dominion Nuclear Project and Dominion Energy Kewaunee filed an application with the commission requesting that the commission consent to the transfer of all of Dominion Energy Kewaunee's stock, including ownership of the Kewaunee Power Station, to a third-party entity, Energy Solutions. On July 9th of 2021, Power and Light and Pub Service requested a declaratory ruling that the utility's waiver of their respective rights under the ROFR was reasonable and prudent. On August 11th, the commission issued a notice of proceeding. A number of parties were granted intervener status, including the utilities, Power and Light, Pub Service, Dominion Energy Kewaunee, Dominion Nuclear Projects, the Citizens Utility Board of Wisconsin Energy Solutions, North Star Group Services, and Wisconsin Industrial Energy Group. There's agreement on a couple of things, not a whole lot of things. But there is agreement by the parties that specific proffered conditions apply to this proceeding, and that is the way that our decision matrix is set up. The first is that going back to the 2005 decision from the commission, one of the proffered conditions was that this commission has the ability to approve any subsequent sale of that power plant for the purpose of determining whether the new owner has sufficient financial resources to operate the plant. And for me, I think it's really important to point out that also contained in this proffered condition is the statement that a decision by the NRC, which is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, approving the license transfer would constitute a rebuttable presumption that the new owner is creditworthy. I think it's important that that is clear to all the parties. Going on, proffered condition 8 states that Dominion Energy Kewaunee will grant to grantees and their successors and assigns a ROFR, which all the parties agree that that ROFR was properly granted.
And then Crawford Condition 11 requires any subsequent purchaser of the plant or of Dominion Energy Kewaunee to intervene as a party. So that was more of a procedural Crawford condition. Then Crawford Condition 9 has been the subject of some back and forth between the parties, and it has to do with the ratepayer funds that are in the qualified decommissioning trust fund for the plant. Crawford conditions state that any excess funds shall be returned to grantees in proportion to their ownership share on the day of the sale of the plant to Dominion Energy Kewaunee. So again, our first decision point, I think we should go to issue two. That's what I have in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
You start with the DR.
Okay. All right. So issue two, did Dominion Energy Kewaunee offer Power and Light and Public a ROFR to purchase the power station as required by the Crawford condition? I think that this one is not controversial, at least not in my mind. And so I'm at alternative one. Yes, they offer the ROFR in compliance with Crawford condition 8, so alt one.
Yeah, we'll get to the substance of it, but yes, there was no question it was offered.
Yep, I'm at alternative one.
And issue three, did Energy Solutions intervene in this proceeding and affirmatively state for the record its commitment to be bound by the proper conditions set forth in the commission's 2005 final decision? And for this one, yes, I think that they have been very clear that they will be bound by that proper condition. So I'm at alternative one. Commissioner?
I am as well. North Star brings in a different issue. I think we can talk about a little later about what you know, the contract offers and stuff. I'll address that later on. I agree with you on one.
I am at alternative one on this, and I guess I'll take the time now to address Star's concerns about the excess funds. You know, reading back to not only the 2005 approval, but the denial before that, and then a little bit to Steve Kime, Dr. Kime from Cubs, question about upside risk and downside risk. And my reading of the denial and then the approval shows that, I mean, that was exactly what was in the balance with the original decision. And, you know, one of the key benefits of that original decision was the $193 million that was returned to ratepayers at the time. And that owner said, you know, this guaranteed return to ratepayers is a real benefit of the sale. Not only does it recognize ratepayers own these trust funds, but also avoids the risk that the actual cost of decommissioning may be so high that it consumes some or all of the non-qualified funds. You know, from there, it goes on to talk about the $405 million non-qualified that will be transferred to DEK, and that all excess ratepayer funds will be returned once it's finally completed. So, however, after that, it says that, you know, including that is removing the perverse incentive to cut corners when decommissioning just so the owner can keep the unused funds. This alone is a valuable benefit to the state. The commission at the time, it feels to me, rereading this, is that the $193 million, that was the benefit to ratepayers. That was the guaranteed benefit. The benefit to the state was ensuring that it was properly decommissioned from a safety perspective. And if there happens to be more, if it doesn't take what's in the fund, then those should be returned to ratepayers and not Dominion. And I feel like that balance was struck 2005. And so to come in now and say, well, we think there's going to be even more that should go back to ratepayers. I hope that there is, but I just don't think there's anything else we can do, because we also specifically relinquish to federal control the specific oversight of those transactions and those costs. So I guess I feel like that risk reward was really, it like I said, it was really hanging in the balance. It wasn't approved, and then it was once more guarantees were given. I'm concerned that we don't go back and relitigate our own final order or try to add additional jurisdiction at this point. So those are my thoughts on some of these broader issues, and you can react to that now, or if you had other points in the, I had listed to mention that under this point. So that's why I landed at alternative one, not, okay. Thanks.
I'm a little confused.
But just because Northstar here was saying Energy Solutions hasn't agreed to proper condition 9 because they're not going to give back as many funds as we would.
Nobody knows how much it's going to be. That's the problem. I mean, that's been the confusing, and I think that's my contention. Like, I have been, this briefing, this testimony has been, I think, over the top in some of the language used by both sides. But the allegation somehow that we're leaving a certain amount of dollars on the table and abdicating our duty to ratepayers is totally unfounded. And there is no guarantee, and there is a huge risk. And I'll just say that if we don't approve this, there is a huge risk to ratepayers, and it's more than $200 million that Northstar is saying. They basically want us to play flip or flop here and let a utility buy back a defunct nuclear plant and hope that the offer that Northstar has only made in testimony eventually goes through. That is a very unserious thing to offer, I think, in testimony, and also for us to do as commissioners, to play with ratepayer dollars like that. And to take out a nuclear plant, I think Cub would have a very different position if we said you can buy a defunct nuclear plant and good luck selling it. I think we'd have a lot of other different interviews here. So I was just, I think, disappointed in, you know, this has to be done because you're walking away from all this money. There is no evidence on the record that we're walking and we're denying ratepayer dollars to do this. Energy Solutions made an offer. The utilities had to make a decision based on the information known to them at the time. And they did. And they made a prudent decision to deny that ROFR or to waive it. So
this is the way that I came to this. And I know that you guys love my analogy, but because we're in prom season, this is how I viewed it. Energy Solutions asked Dominion. Dominion said yes, but I have to go back and check with my parents to be sure that it's okay. Power and Light and Pub Service. Power and Light and Pub Service said yes, a reasonable. That is a reasonable request. Go ahead, get the corsages ordered. And then Northstar comes in to us and says no. We want to go to the prom, and they should pick us to go to the prom because we're gonna guarantee that we're gonna have a better time. But that's not how it works. So that's how I sort of thought about this. And then the language and the testimony back and forth was a little bit over the top because I think Northstar feels jilted. But that is not our role to step in and undo all of the negotiation and the fact that these are really, really sophisticated and complicated decisions that neither Pub Service nor Power and Light took lightly. And again, what is the option that we say, okay, yes, you have to go to the prom with them, and that means that you have to buy back the nuclear plant? It doesn't make any sense. And so I feel really strongly about
we can't conflate what is reasonable and prudent with what's lowest cost.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kept coming up over and over from North Star, that this promise of we can do it cheaper. Cheaper doesn't always mean safer, and cheaper doesn't mean more reasonably. And that is not our directive, or our responsibility isn't to go with the cheapest option. We have to make sure that it's done prudently and that it's done safely.
Especially when it's nuclear waste.
Correct.
I think North Star was reading more into what the conditions allowed the utilities to do with the ROFR. Like, they said, well, you have to do an analysis. It has to be done. That's not what it says. Mm-hmm. And they want us to go back and put things into the conditions that just simply aren't there. And aside from all the fact that, you know, Dominion is not a regulated entity by us, too. So how they choose to sell their assets is not something we have jurisdiction over. And they also want us to read into that condition about returning excess funds, that there must be excess funds. That's not what that says, if there are any.
Right.
So there was a lot of, I think, stretching and winding and legal gymnastics, I think, to get to the part where they wanted us to get to. But it just, you know, there was a lot of evidence and testimony on both sides, and sir rebuttal. And, you know, the point was made, but there's clearly, I think, the sufficiency of the evidence here finds that the waiver of the ROFR was appropriate.
On issue four?
I think we've just hit all the issues.
No,
I think it's in the whole, in them all.
Sure.
But yes, I mean, so just to be precise, yes, issue four was the determination by the two utilities to waive their rights under the ROFR. Was that reasonable and prudent? So I'm at alt one. Their decision was reasonable.
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the, you want our regulated utilities in the chain of responsibility? No. Do we want to be in the chain of responsibility for making them go back in the chain of responsibility? Also, no. So I agree that it was reasonable.
Then issue five is, does the proposed sale comply with proper condition four, and this is sufficient financial resources? And again, this is why I said this at the outset, because I think it's important. I think it bears repeating, and that is that approval by the NRC equates to a rebuttable presumption of creditworthiness, right? They are the regulatory agency with the expertise as it relates to the operation and the decommissioning of nuclear facilities. And their energy solution has now been approved by the NRC. And so because of that, I'm at alt one, which, yes, it does comply with proffered condition four as it relates to financial capability.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think also there was discussion, too, about their capability and then knowing how the dollars are spent. I don't know if that was put into a different issue, but there are certainly controls in place at the NRC regarding what is left in the decommissioning fund, what the dollars are spent on, if they're spent for a proper purpose. There's IRS regulations that have to be met with, that market rates are paid, that there's no self-dealing, et cetera. So I think, and that combined with the language in our earlier order of us relinquishing our authority and relying upon federal controls, I think leads to my satisfaction that there's adequate control over those ratepayer dollars.
Yeah, I'm also at alternative one, and I just, as we're winding down, I wanted to just say one thing I thought was valuable from North Star, and that's related to their testimony saying the nuclear decommissioning industry is watching Wisconsin's action, and I just thought it was worth responding to that notion that, you know, this is a very unique case And this, really, what we do here should not be looked at by those contractors or other commissions as, you know, necessarily a blueprint. Every commission has got to do what's in the best interest of their ratepayers. If their nuclear plants are still owned by regulated utilities, they will follow and do the public interest for them. A fixed cost cap makes sense. Great.
Right.
For them, if a competitive bid is required, that's great. We are hanging on by a thread to jurisdiction here from a tax sale from 17 years ago. So this isn't, I'm not saying we're doing anything right or wrong. I'm saying that every state's going to do it different. And North Star shouldn't feel like, okay, if this one goes through as sole source, you know, there's not going to be any competitive bidding going forward. You know, I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, I think they were, you know, they referenced the Vermont Yankee and Crystal Lake or Crystal River. I mean, different situations, as you said. And, you know, there was a lot of state legislation with the Vermont. Just keep that open and do probably many other things. So, yeah, you can't just plug and play and say, well, it happened in Vermont, so, you know, you have to do the same way here. Again, it's all very different. So, yeah, perhaps many are watching, but it's very fact-specific. And I would guarantee that there's no other order written like that 2005 order. So, and that's what's really controlling here.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just thought it was worth making that.
Yeah. No, I think thanks for bringing that up.
And
yeah.
One of you said it, but it is that we have to be really careful that we're not going to sit up here and relitigate an order that was very, very contentious and
yeah.
was actually subject to going back, right? I mean, it was not like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of us were sitting here. And so what we have in front of us is extremely narrow.
And you're right, from a jurisdictional perspective, we have to be careful about what we're doing.
Just if I can just make one other point on the North Star is, you know, one of the things that was tough for me to realize, I mean, is obviously these are competitors. So on one side, North Star is very concerned that Energy Solutions is too close to Dominion, that they didn't bid it out. On the other side, for us, for me at least, I was concerned that the 550, I guess we'll talk about this in the conditions, that the $550 million cap is almost a way to prevent Energy Solutions from being able to fully do the job and using that perhaps as a competitive disadvantage to try to get that cap installed. So that was one of my concerns. And I thought at the end of the day, Energy Solutions has done Zion, which is almost done, and they've done La Crosse. So as far as this, you know, can Energy Solutions do the work? Do they have the financial resources? I thought the evidence was clear that they can do it. So,
yep, and I think
right.
you brought up that is there are financial controls that are in place. There are IRS controls in place. The NRC builds a very big stick when it comes to making sure that this is done properly. And at the end of the day, I kept coming back to doing something like imposing a price cap. Well, first, I don't think we have the jurisdiction
right.
to do that.
When I
look back at our 2005 final decision, we don't have the ability to be putting conditions on the 17-year-old final decision. And that's why I came up with my prom analogy, because the final decision is 17 years old. But that being said, there's a difference between something being done safely and something being done inexpensively. And again, I think it's really important that we don't confuse doing something at a lower cost with being in the best interest of the rate of ultimately the residents of the state of Wisconsin. Because for me, the primary concern in this particular case is one of safety. So for that reason, I don't believe we have the jurisdiction to impose any conditions as North Star would have us do. Now, I know that in several testimony, she suggested that perhaps we remove Crawford Condition 10 as it's no longer applicable. I didn't have really strong feelings about that. I would just assume keep things clean and not be.
I don't want to muck around that order.
With the order, just leave it the
yeah.
way it is. And also, my understanding of the statute is that
Wisconsin statute 196.807 doesn't apply to decommissioned sites.
Yeah.
So I am not inclined to add any conditions under the issue six.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, again, it's not a blank check. Many times, we are not giving a blank check to anybody to do this. But second of all, I agree with you that we don't have the jurisdiction to impose a lot of any of these conditions. And even if we did, there's no basis other than someone's testimony. Like, I don't know where that $550 million came from. There's no basis in the record for that. And it's hypocritical for them then to turn around and say, for us, you know, and that's where Cub started to weave around and then say, well, maybe we should have an independent, because then Northstar has been arguing you shouldn't have just looked at one, but now they want to turn around and tell us just assign it to them. And
right.
So that was a bit hypocritical. So, but I don't, even if you get there, we don't have that ability to do that. We can't go back and do that. That's, and they didn't provide a legal basis either, or how we would be able to do that. So I agree with you. I would leave that other condition in there. And I also agree that 196.807 doesn't apply. So I guess that's alternative two.
Yes, I'm at alternative two. And like I kind of brought up in my earlier comments, perhaps in the wrong issue exactly, but the 2005 order, $193 million went back to ratepayers. And the directive from the commission then was, the rest of the funds are there so that the Dominion and any other contractor will not cut corners to preserve
right.
the safety of
right.
decommissioning a nuclear power plant.
Right.
But if there's extra,
right.
it doesn't go in Dominion's pocket, it goes back to ratepayers. That was the balance.
That's right.
And again, it was denied with one dissenting vote, and then it was flipped because of some extra guarantees, including this. So I feel like that risk-reward balance that Cub really is seeking, that was really struck in 2005, and I hope that the contingency is not needed and that there's sufficient, you know, a lot of funds that go back to ratepayers. I hope the job is easier than Energy Solutions expects and they can return funds, but we can't enforce that.
Right.
Agreed. So now we go back to the beginning. issue one. Should the commission approve the sale of Dominion Energy Sewanee stock to Energy Solutions and grant the requested declaratory ruling on the prudence of Wisconsin Power and Light Company and Wisconsin Public Service Corporation for a waiver of the rights of first refusal? So for issue one, I am at
1A.
What?
1A.
1A.
Issue one. Oh, sorry. Yes, 1A. Alt 1.
I agree.
I agree.
Issue 1B, should we issue a declaratory ruling that Power and Light's decision to waive the ROFR was reasonable and prudent? I'm at of 1.
Yes.
I agree.
Okay. And issue 1C, should we issue a declaratory ruling that Public Services' decision to waive the ROFR was reasonable and prudent? I'm also at of 1.
That's right.
I agree.
Okay.
All right. Docket 9812EI100, I move that we approve the application of Dominion Energy Kewaunee Inc. pursuant to our discussion today.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to agenda item C, which is an agenda item that we are going to go into closed session. So we're going to recess the open meeting and go into closed session to discuss the litigation matter of Iowa Coalition for Affordable Transmission versus ITC Midwest LLC.
We'll go into closed pursuant to 1985 sub 2. Oh, okay, sub 1, sub G, and then we will be open pursuant to 1985 sub 2.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We now move ahead in the meeting.
That's how it will be on YouTube.
Great.
Okay. While we were in closed session, we received legal
direction from our chief legal counsel.
So that brings us to the end of today's agenda. The next open meeting is scheduled for Thursday, June 2nd, 2022 at 10:30 a.m., so no meeting next week.
We stand adjourned until Thursday, June 2nd.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.